Darnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac. To the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac. Go crazy. Touchdown.
Now they can play a little safer, but they're not going to. Nix is back. Throws it downfield. Punt. Touchdown, Williams.
A 20-yard attempt. Josh Harris, the snapper. He'll call to the place. He'll hold it. Byram waits for the snap to the place. There it is. The kick is up. The kick is good. Auburn wins. 22-19.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Auburn Today podcast. As always, my name is Noble. I'm joined here with my co-host, Wheeler. And today we have one of the sadder pods I foresee for the foreseeable future. You know, we talked last week about how excited we were for March Madness, how we thought, you know, this team was primed for a run. And, you know, everything we said last week was factual. And we mentioned right at the end, you know, on paper, there's no reason we should lose to Yale. And that was true. You know, we saw the team that Yale was in the second round when they got slapped around by San Diego State. But unfortunately, they caught lightning in a bottle against us. We had moments, couldn't step up when it mattered the most, and Auburn lost in the first round, which a team really does suck for this team, that it was just a really solid season, SEC tournament win, you get a banner, and you go out with a first-round exit. I mean, and then we'll go into the optics of the roster for next year, who's coming back, who's not going to come back. But before, let's talk about the game for just a short amount of time. I know no one really wants to think about the game, but Wheeler, just kind of give us your thoughts on how Auburn, you know, performed in that game, the strengths that you saw, the weaknesses you saw, and what ultimately caused the fall apart right there at the end.
No, well, I think what hurts the most. Hey, have you seen Jani Broome's LinkedIn post from this summer when he went to New York and worked for a finance company?
No.
No. Did you see anybody who's a starting basketball player for Auburn University who just took the summer off of basketball, went up to New York and had a great learning experience and liked to thank that big company for their awesome internship?
Can't say that I have.
Yeah. Well, a guy that dropped us off for 26, took the summer off, and was just going over to the local YMCA and getting shots up in his tie. I mean, that guy dropped us off for 26. Can you – summer intern. He was the intern, like, on the office. Like,
He was the temp.
Ryan from the office just manhandled Auburn University. He manhandled us. It's the beauty of March, and it is the agony of March. This is exactly what Kentucky feels when that dude with a horrible hairline, who used to be a D2 player that doesn't take two-point shots, dropped them off for 40 and had an NCAA record. It is so frustrating when it is your team, and you know that everyone on your roster is getting paid six figures to literally go up to Neville Arena in the summertime and play basketball. They get paid a ton of money to go and do random interviews and to do the Bruce Pearl basketball camp so that they can be good at basketball, so that they can make their free throws in March, so that they can make a layup in March when the game is on the line, so they don't miss the front end of a 1-1 in the last minute, so that when you chunk up a three to win the game with 2 seconds left, you actually at least hit the rim and it doesn't look like you just took a full court shot to win a car. Man, it was just awful. I know everybody wants to blame the refs. I know that everybody wants to say, oh, look, Auburn's refs are the only ones that didn't advance. And yes, the referees were not ideal. It was terrible, but the referees are not the only ones to blame here. It is not like Auburn was playing a great game and the refs just kept losing it for them. Auburn had multiple opportunities in the last minute of the game to win the game. And you've got players who are crying on the sidelines with a towel over their head when the game's not over yet. You miss all of the free throws, which granted, it is tough to make free throws in a clutch moment, but that's what you're in school for. CJ Stroud said it best. I'm not here to play school. Okay? You're here to make free throws. That's why you have the NIL deal, is to make the free throws at the end of the game, to make the layup at the end of the game. Jani had a great game, 25 points. Of course, he had a great game. It was just brutal. It was brutal to watch. It's the agony of defeat. It's what March Madness is all about. It's horrible when it's your team that does it. And it hurts even worse when the team that upsets you. You know, at least Oakland, they upset Kentucky and they have a really respectable game. They go to overtime. They go to overtime in the next game. San Diego State, I mean, beat Yale into oblivion. They beat Yale like their star player was in New York for a finance internship this summer. They beat them like a team should be beat. I mean, solidly thumped them. It's so tough. It's brutal. I don't even put it on Bruce. I didn't think that the game plan was bad. And I think that the game plan was a lot around Chad Baker-Mazzara. And again, people are mad at the refs. You can't build a reputation for yourself and get a double technical in every game for six games straight. Look back at somebody, wind up, and just nail them in the stomach and not expect to get an ejection. I mean, you shouldn't put it in the ref's hands. They definitely could have called it a flagrant one. They did not have to toss him from the game. But as far as egregious calls in March, I didn't think that was the most egregious call. I mean, that was just dumb. Like, that was not an effort play. That was not even at the end of the game where somebody's been chirping that long. It's 3 minutes into the game. You look back at the target, wind up, and sock him. And, I mean, you got what you deserved. I mean, that's exactly what you got. And Chad has been great for the team. He was great in the SEC tournament, and he would have been super helpful. You know, I think that Auburn wins. I think Auburn wins like San Diego State does if Chad doesn't get thrown out, because I think, one, Chad adds something to the team, and two, I think that the momentum of the game completely turns on its head as soon as Chad gets tossed from the game. It completely changed the mojo of the game. Everything about March is about momentum, and it was just, I mean, John Rothstein says it best. The epitome of brutality. That is what it was. It you basically lost a bye game. And that's what happened. And it's tragic. It's sad. It's March. That's how it goes. That is why I'm a football fan. I enjoy Auburn basketball. But college football is the far superior sport. We will talk about the football team, which, again, I wish we could have hope. I really wish we could have hope. Guys, just buckle up. Just buckle up. It's about to get bumpy. We either need to chase a quarterback out of the portal. I don't care if we tamper. I don't care if we use the whole NIL collective and we have nothing left. We need a quarterback. Or this year is going to be misery to watch. It's going to be absolute misery. If you don't believe me, you just go watch some of the practice footage. Just go watch Peyton Thorne throw against air. And you tell me that he's going to be able to magically turn it around. He's going to be able to throw dots against Georgia. That he's going to be able to go up to Athens in a raucous environment. Man can't hit somebody in the hands in March when it's 64 degrees outside and no one's watching. That he's going to go between the hedges and is going to play lights out. It's not going to happen, folks. It's going to be bad. The football, we're about to talk about football. I'm down bad, okay? And there's no saving it right now. We're down. We are down really bad. We don't even talk about baseball on this show. Baseball has the game won, and dude that's hitting 100, he hit not 200 in baseball. Man hits 168, tears the living cover off of the baseball and sends it to Opelika. He may not have said, he sent it to Columbus. I mean, over the green monster, just one more reminder, Auburn Athletics is here to break your heart and take your money.
Yeah, so Wheeler's quite dismayed. Going into the game, we felt good. Pulakitas comes out with 28. The intern comes out with 28, only misses five shots, follows it up with a...
He didn't play that good at the YMCA this summer. Sources say.
He follows it up the next game, goes 2 for 9 with 9 points. The guy just wasn't that good, hitting some crazy shots. And half the time, the defense wasn't even bad. No, half the time, the defense was great.
The plan was
the guy just hit a good shot. I mean, what can you do? Their best player, Danny Wolf, I mean, was 4 for 15, couldn't do anything, ended up fouling out. Jani played a phenomenal game, 24, 13, and 4, only missed 2 free throws, made 2 when it really mattered, when we really needed free throws. Jani stepped up to the plate. He played so well. He really did. Okay. I don't want to discount what he did because he played very well. Jalen Williams had a sneaky good game as well. He played really well. Would have liked him to take a couple more shots, but I thought he played well. Denver Jones, phenomenal game, 17 points, 5 for 7, 3 for 5 from 3, played really solid defense. The problem was everyone else, yep. Really. I mean, obviously Chad Baker-Mazar with 3 points gets tossed from the game. His stat line was about the same as Aiden Holloway's, just with less shot attempts. They both had 0 points. They both had a foul. Chad had an assist. They both had 1 rebound. Chad did not take a shot. Aiden took 5 and missed 5. So Aiden really just did not have a good showing. You could tell he was just he was defeated, and that definitely reflected in his minutes. The staff definitely leaned on Trey and KD a lot more. Trey was 2 for 7, had 6 rebounds. I didn't think Trey played poor. Yeah, I mean, it was just the bench just played fine. It wasn't that, you know, exceptional bench performance that we've been used to. We really just were relying on 3 guys that were playing well, and that was all we could do. Defensively, I thought that defensively it was fine. Yale was hitting some tough shots. And ultimately, it came down to free throws. I mean, you had Trey, Denver, and KD all miss free throws in the clutch. You know, if you hit those, game probably is a little different. Jani had 6 offensive rebounds, and on I know 2 of them late in the game we couldn't capitalize, couldn't get any second chance points, and that was really what killed us. But overall, it was just an off game. You know, we just had the guys that we had been leaning on to, you know, our best players played like our best players, and our bench players just didn't play like what they could have. Then most of them didn't play bad. It was just they just didn't play like we needed them to play. Yale hit tough shots. That's March. You know, that's just how it works. Very disappointing game. And you're starting to see the wheels turning now. I think that if any Auburn fans are like me, I'm kind of just resigned to the tournament, and I'm just focused on in the basketball arena, focused on how Auburn's going to look next year and what's going to happen with that. And I think we all could definitely see the writing on the wall that there was going to be some roster turnover. You know, I mean, obviously you have Jalen Williams and Lior Berman are out of eligibility, so they'll be done. They'll be gone to the next level. But there are a lot of decisions left to be made. You have Chris Moore, Dylan Cardwell, and Jani Broome all have the option of a COVID year that they can take or not. Jani Broome obviously has the strongest case of going to the next level. Whether it be G League, NBA, or overseas somewhere, obviously he put on the best performance. But with that, you also have that kind of the pull back to Auburn is that you have a lot of NIL backing him. And, you know, you have a lot of guys that, you know, if we can get Jani to come back, feel like the team's back in business. So Jani is going to be offered quite the generous NIL package. So be watching Jani to see where his decision lies with that. I expect most of the team, if eligible, to quote unquote declare for the draft, test the waters. We've talked about that in excess. And if you're new to the podcast, testing the NBA waters is essentially you go out, scouts can talk to you, they'll tell you what you need to work on. You can come back to school as long as you don't sign with an agent. Just gives guys good feedback, lets the pros tell them what they need to work on for the next level. So I expect a lot of guys to do that. But watch the decisions of Jani, Dylan Cardwell, and Chris Moore specifically with that COVID year, if they'll come back or not. Katie Johnson, it was, you know, the reports came out today that he will be entering the transfer portal. that was something that didn't come as a huge surprise to a lot of us, I don't think. I think that everyone kind of saw that at least one of the guards was not going to be here next year. With the Todd Pettiford coming in, you have the transfer portal as well. Expecting one of those guards to leave. Now, if KD is gone, it opens up another scholarship spot. And you also have to watch the future of Aiden and Trey. You know, you got to see the decisions of both of those guys with NIL knocking on the door, with playing time, all those being factors, seeing the decisions that both of those guys have. I would 100% expect at least one of them to stay, possibly two, but possibly just one. I would say that Trey probably is the more sure thing to return based off of how he played this year. But we'll see how that goes. But Wheeler, before we move on to the football segment of this podcast, give us your thoughts on the roster, what it would mean for this team, for Jahni Broome to come back, how big that would be, and how the loss of KD Johnson is going to change the dynamic of the team, expecting that guys, you know, the transfers that came in, like Chaney Johnson, Denver Jones, Shad Baker-Mazzara, will all obviously are expected to return and be the kind of the cornerstones of this next year's team.
I mean, I think that if Jahni comes back, then the expectation is that you're in the top five of the SEC next year, or top four. I think that you expect to get the double bye come SEC tournament time. And I think that you hope to get a four seed again or better. If Jahni leaves, I think it's really hard to forecast if Jahni and Dylan are both gone. The odds that you're able to pick up two guys that replace Jahni and Dylan is going to be very unlikely
as well.
Yeah, I think you're going to miss Jay Will. I think that you could move Chad and kind of have him play a different style. I think that the offense would look different, but you can move Chad. I don't think you're going to get a Jay Will type guy, but I think you can get somebody that still works with the team playing the four. So I think even though Jay Will was good, I think you can replace Jay Will because you can change the offense to a different kind of four more easily. It's easier to find a four than a dominant five.
I agree.
And so I think Dylan, he's a little bit more of a replaceable piece. I think if he were to leave and Jahni were to come back, then you can find somebody maybe not exactly like Dylan, not quite as, you know, emotional, not in terms of team leadership, but just as far as on the court talent. I think you can replace Dylan's talent on the court. I don't think you can find somebody like Jahni. I mean, the odds that you're going to find another guy that you've gotten Walker Kessler and you've gotten Jahni, I mean, that's a pretty lucky string of transfers. I don't think we've had that much success anywhere else.
Well, and it's also, I think, like Jahni in the portal last year was a really solid pickup. But Jahni this year and Jahni last year, I think it's a different player.
Yeah.
You know, just from a dominance perspective, from outside shot, like to find someone as polished as Jahni is now is going to be next to impossible, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they found Walker, but Walker
was an exception, though.
You're not going to find a lot of Walkers. You're not, because COVID was the real reason that Walker left. You know, I mean, he basically just had a really bad experience because of COVID. And so unless you have somebody that just randomly had like mono or something, like it's going to be hard to find somebody that's as talented as Walker that's looking to enter the portal. So, yeah, I think it's hard to forecast right now. I do agree with you. I think that, you know, there's a lot of reports that Aiden will leave. I think that the choice is really going to be up to Aiden. I think, and this is not insider information, this is just me projecting what's going to happen. If I'm an outsider looking at it, and there's a rumor that Jahni may come back, and then you've got a guy who was a McDonald's All-American five-star, you can imagine that Aiden's NIL package to come to Auburn was probably pretty significant. I don't think that anybody would really dispute that. You know, I don't know what it looks like actually behind closed doors in terms of negotiating year to year, but it sounds like if players can come and ask for a raise, it stands to reason that if you're a McDonald's All-American five-star and you put up the production that Aiden did, that there's also the opportunity that your NIL could take a hit. Not below the line of other players on the team, or not below, you know, the standard of you're a normal Auburn basketball player, but if you're getting paid top money, like you're one of the best players, like you expected Aiden to come in and be, and you're a contributor, and that's being generous. I think being a contributor really is generous. You look at SEC play, think there were that Georgia game, he was a contributor and made a big contribution. Other than that, I mean, I think role player would be another generous term. And then in the tournament, it was just detractor. I mean, honestly, he didn't do anything to win the game. He was not helpful in winning the NCAA tournament game. And honestly, you look at the SEC tournament, he didn't do a ton to win in the SEC tournament. I mean, he had a big three against Florida coming out of the half, and that's the biggest play I can think of Aiden making in the entire tournament. And so it's tough when you disappear in tournament time, you disappear in conference play, and you were mid in regular. I mean, he had a great game against Baylor. So that's the only game that I'm like, wow, Aiden had a great game against a good team, was against Baylor. And then other than that, I mean, I think it stands to reason that it's looking, you know, at renegotiating that deal. And that may be something that he's not interested in because he can probably get a better deal on somebody who's looking for the future somewhere else. And so I think that'll be an interesting thing. And that's the part of roster management that I think is new and we haven't seen yet. Like, we haven't had a five-star who was – well, I guess we had Johan last year, but Johan didn't even go to a big school. Like, Johan went to George Mason or George Washington. I mean, he went somewhere like
Bubba Tunde went to George Washington. I want to say Johan went to
Cal State Poly or something.
No, it was in it is in California. Was it Santa Barbara?
That could be it. But I mean, he was another one who's five star. But the amount of hype,
UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, UC Santa Barbara. The amount of hype coming in for him was not even the amount for Aiden. You know, you've seen a lot of like Walker coming in and outperforming expectation. Honestly, Jabari outperforming expectation a little bit. Isaac Okoro outperforming expectation. You've seen a lot of Auburn players come in and outperform and get rewarded for that. You haven't seen a ton of guys come in and be, and it sounds harsh, but disappointing based off of what you were expecting to get based off of their ranking. Because if you're a McDonald's All-American, the expectation is that you're going to be a one-and-done, most likely. If you're a scoring McDonald's All-American, that's the expectation, and that has just not been met. So we figured that somebody would enter the portal, whether it was KD, whether it was Aiden, whether it was both of them. And, you know, looking at KD, I would be surprised if he goes to a major SEC school. If I had to take a guess, he's probably going to take a small step down in competition to try and get a little bit more playing time. I think that to him, he's made money. He's had a good time at Auburn, and now he's going to play basketball somewhere. Because I think Bruce pretty much told him, hey, we're looking in the portal. We're looking at guards. And if you're playing major minutes, we're probably not going to be very good. And, I mean, that's a harsh reality to say that to a guy that's really been a contributor to your team. But he's very inconsistent, and that's hard to deal with. It's hard to have a lot of guys that are inconsistent. And if I'm Bruce, I think reflecting back on the past couple of years, it's where have we gone wrong? How have we been so good in the regular season and then struggled so mightily in the tournament? And I think it always comes back to you have a lot of inconsistent players that you don't know what you're going to get. You have a lot of high-ceiling guys with low floors. And I think you're looking to make a little bit more of an even run in the future.
Well, and I think the difficult thing is that all of the high ceiling, low floor guys have been from the guard position.
Yep.
You know, you've had guys like Janai for the past two seasons, pretty consistent. I mean, obviously last year in the tournament, Janai just couldn't hit a free throw against Houston. But the year before, you have Jabari, who just had a bad shooting night. But the multiple years that you had the Wendell, the Zepp,
KD.
I mean Trey. You know, I mean, Trey last year in the tournament was solid, but even then, it was like that wasn't someone that you go into the tournament relying on. And the guards have always just been the question mark for the past three seasons.
And really, that's a bad recipe in March.
And really, even before then, the year that Sharif was there, when Sharif wasn't playing, the guards were a huge question. I mean, Alan Flanagan was the point guard. You know, yeah. I mean, it was the guard started as such a strong point of emphasis for Bruce Pearl at Auburn. You know, had Kareem Canty for a little while, KT Harrell, Jared Harper. You know, then Samir Dowdy and Javon McCormick. Then, you have Sharif when he was playing. And then ever since then, it's kind of dropped off. And the shift has been, you know, you've had some great front court, you know, really, really good front court guys. But I think that Bruce is trying to move back to that that guard play, because when you watch in March, that those are the teams, you know. Yeah. The teams that have exceptional guard play are the teams that move forward. Even if their best players are bigs, like Auburn's have been the past couple of years, they have guards that can step up to the occasion and make plays. And I think that that's what Auburn has been lacking. And I think that that's what Auburn doesn't have on a consistent basis. So, and, you know, even if the staff didn't push out these players, you know, from KD's perspective, you know, he played big minutes at Georgia, played big minutes at Auburn for 2 years. This year, all of a sudden, you know, his role diminishes, plays a different role. You know, if he is going to just play more minutes, I don't know. I think I could see him going a step down in competition. I could also see him going to a Missouri-type place. I think if he goes to Missouri, he on Missouri's team this year, he would have played 25 minutes a game. Vanderbilt, like, I think that if he goes to a lower-level SEC place, now I think if he wants to compete for conference championships, he might have to take a step down in competition. And I think that he would do decently well in those kind of places. But I think that now it's kind of a sit back and wait, see what the guys do, and just see how Bruce Pearl and the staff manage this roster going forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that'll wrap up our basketball talk. It's just been obviously not an ideal situation with losing in the first round, but now we'll shift our attention to football with spring practice going on. Haven't been a ton of reports coming out of spring practice. That's never a great thing. I don't know if that's just because the coaches are trying to keep a lot of things close to the vest. They're not being as open with the media as they have been in previous years, whatever. Some things that have come through really clearly, everyone talks about Cam Coleman being as advertised, being a stud, which is good. It's always nice when you hear of players doing well. But when you read reports of Cam Coleman just making one-handed catches left and right, at some point you think, all right, you're supposed to throw it to the receiver to where he can catch it with two hands. I mean, that is the goal of playing the quarterback position. So when you hear of a wide receiver stealing the show every single practice, it starts to concern you a little bit, because you're like, all right, do we have any practices where the quarterbacks are just hitting the guys in stride and
he doesn't have to make a one-handed grab?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like there have been many practices where the offense is just moving as a well-oiled machine. The quarterbacks are marching down the field. It just doesn't feel like that from what we've seen. And obviously, A-Day's coming up, we'll be able to see a little bit more of how the QBs have developed, be able to watch them more in a live atmosphere. But so far, just off the reports from spring practice, it doesn't sound like all that much has changed from last year.
Well, you don't hear any hype about Walker White. You don't hear any hype about Holden. You don't hear any hype about Hank Brown. You have War Eagle Plus.
And it's not even that you're hearing hype about Peyton Thorne.
No.
You're just not hearing anything from the quarterbacks.
Well, you're not hearing anything about hardly anything other than Cam Coleman.
Yeah.
And if there's a serious battle going on, you're going to hear, man, it's Hank Brown. He's really pushing. He, you know, kind of preparing everybody. Oh, man, Holden, he's turned the corner. Something happened in the 5 weeks since the Maryland game. You know, Walker White came in. Man, he's better than we expected as a freshman. He might be competing. And no shot at Walker White. I mean, I don't think that the expectation truly was that he was going to play in year one. I don't think he was expecting. I don't think anybody was expecting that. I think that there was hope that from Auburn fans that maybe he was going to come in and be a world beater and surprise everybody and be the savior. And it sounds like he's going to be exactly what he was recruited to be, which is a quarterback down the road.
Which, and I will say, we talked about this about a week ago, is the expectation for a QB coming in as an early enrollee still should, you know, age-wise, he should be in high school. I think you give him a pass for the first spring.
Oh, I'm not blaming the guy. He has not been exceptional that he's competing with the six-year senior.
I agree. I think it's important you give him a spring to get accustomed. I mean, he's got a change. He's changing into the college mindset. He's not in high school anymore. You know, his life is completely different. The game is so much faster from playing high school ball in Arkansas. I think you give him the spring, you give him the summer to work out, get ready. And then in fall camp, you know, that's when you see freshman Walker White. You know, I think the difference in Walker in fall camp and spring training will be vastly different. But I do agree, we haven't heard a lot from Walker White coming out of spring.
No. And I mean, I don't think you're going to hear anything from the running backs because, first of all, they're probably not in full contact right now. And so running backs are going to look fairly standard across. I bet if you went to almost every SEC school and you watched running back drills, I mean, unless somebody's just like built like Derrick Henry, nobody's going to stick out to you. It's just like, oh my gosh.
And yeah. And I mean, the only running backs we might hear something from, Jeremiah Cobb, maybe Damari, but it's like, I mean, Jarquez, he's been a major contributor for the past three seasons.
Yeah.
Like we know he's going to be an above average running back in the SEC. He's not going to all of a sudden just be a bad running back.
Yeah. And I think with Jarquez, you know, when fall camp roll, I don't think he's going to get that many touches in fall camp. I think the thing that you look for in the season is, does he still have a fumbling problem?
Yeah.
That's Jarquez's biggest issue is going to be, does he have a fumbling problem in the fall? Not does he have vision, not does he run people over, not does he have great effort. He has all of those things. He also fumbles the ball. That's not going to show up in spring practice. When you're running through the dummy drills, that's not going to show up. Same thing with defense. I think that the linebacking room is going to be really solid, but, I mean, who talks about the linebackers that much? When you're basically running 7-on-7s all day,
Linebackers aren't doing a whole lot.
The linebackers, yeah. They're covering running backs out of the backfield, and they're probably not going to do as well as they do in a real game where it's a real football game. And same with O-line, D-line. It doesn't seem like there's much news coming out. And that's concerning solely because you typically get the hype train going on some guys, and it just sounds like we're the exact same. It sounds like Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson are going to be vastly different. It sounds like the linebackers are going to be good from what they were coming out of the portal. It sounds like the DB room is going to be struggling a little bit. It's not shaping up well, Noble.
Yeah, and I think
it's shaping up to be another 6-win season.
I do think, though, that this spring is something to take in moderation. I think that once we watch an A-Day, you see a lot of young guys playing. And the young guy, spring is meant for young guys to make a lot of mistakes. So, you know, if we have guys like, you know, Kay and Lee, who played a good amount this season, but you have guys like Tyler Scott, young DBs that are going to be getting more reps, Caleb Wooden, who's played marginally, but he's going to be expected to play a lot more. You know, so you see a lot of these guys, if they're making mistakes in the spring, I'm perfectly fine. I'm perfectly fine not hearing from them. Now, if we make it to the fall and they're still making those mistakes, we're going to see the mistakes. You know, yeah. We're going to see all that. But giving these guys time in spring to make mistakes, summer to work out, get better, improve, and then see where they are in the fall. I think Cam Coleman, obviously, we know he's good. Everyone knows he's good. Cool. Perry Thompson, when he gets in here in the fall, I imagine we'll hear a lot of, oh, Perry Thompson is as advertised. That's going to be good. And that will make Peyton Thorne better. It will. Because Peyton Thorne, there were some plays, some games where he played well, the receivers did not. There were some games where he just was not playing well, and it didn't matter who was running the routes.
Peyton Thorne could be a Bruce Pearl guard the past 3 years.
Yes.
That is the exact – that is Peyton Thorne.
He has
the high ceiling where he has a great game, and then he has games that you're like, oh, my gosh. Are you a Division I football player?
And if you have enough games where Peyton Thorne is playing well, the receivers are making plays, you win 8-9 games, and you have another top 10 recruiting class, okay. It is what it is. It's not ideal. It's not what anyone wants.
Oh, I would love
but
that.
But at this point, I'm
nine,
fine with eight.
Eight to nine games, I think everybody is – especially nine games. If you win nine games, that's the best Auburn has played in 5-6 years.
Which is just disgusting
It's disgusting how bad we are, but that's why I'm so low on it, is you've been miserable for the past 4 years. Miserable.
Yeah,
there is not any kind of flicker of hope that this year is going to be significantly different.
The problem with this year is the roster is not all that different. It's younger. You know, you're replacing the veterans that you had with younger guys that might be the same, you know, and who knows, they might be have the same talent level. But if you have that, you still have the performance that you had on the field last year. It's just younger. Now that does excite you for next season, you know, for the following season. But then you don't, you know,
there's
you don't,
always next
yeah, year. Yeah, and you don't want to be in spring of 2024 talking about that 2025 season. But that's where we're at. And you got to, I mean, you know, we've talked, you got to give Hugh time to build the roster. I think recruiting is more important than, I think the class he signs in December is going to be more important than the actual results on the field.
And now, I think everyone can get on board with that if you win eight.
I agree.
And that's
yes.
Is not a high expectation. Winning eight games is not a high expectation.
And I'll tell you something. The thing that I want to see from Hugh Freeze the most this season is taking care of his home field, because that is something that he did a very, very poor job of. You can say what you want about Harsin, say what you want about Gus. Most of the time, they played pretty dang well at home. And I mean, obviously, when Brian Harsin's last year, it was like, all right, it's over, you know. Yeah. But in 2021, he played decently well at home. Gus was always really solid at home. Hugh was not good at home. Obviously, you had two games against Alabama and Georgia that are really good teams. You should have won both of them. You lost both. You know, the home record last year was awful. This year, you start out with five home games. And if this was one of those –
and none of them are horribly bad.
Yeah.
You should start 5-0.
I think you should start 5-0. The Oklahoma game is like, all right, they could be better. But even then, there's a lot of question marks about Oklahoma. I think that should be a win. But ultimately, after what I saw last year, I don't know if I feel comfortable really getting excited about that one. But you got to take care of the home field. And correct me if I'm wrong, we only have four road games this year, right?
I'm looking at it now. We go to Georgia, we go to Missouri, to
Kentucky, and Alabama.
To Alabama, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, if you take care of your home field, you go 8-4. If you steal one that you're not supposed to win, you go 9-3. That's a decent season. Have a top 10 recruiting class. You'll take that.
No, sorry. You should win on the road at Kentucky. This goes back to how sad the state of Auburn is. That right now we're looking at it and you're talking about road games to Kentucky, saying you steal one you shouldn't have. That's pitiful.
It is pitiful, but that's where Auburn is.
You're going to Kroger Field.
Robbing
one from the Wildcats.
It's where Auburn is. Missouri for the vast majority of the time that they were in the SEC was not good. Now they're
solid. Missouri is fine. Missouri, you stole one because Missouri has a chance to go to the playoff this year. Kentucky, no. No, there has been nothing that Kentucky has done that makes you think that you are stealing anything from Kentucky. Are you kidding me?
I don't know, man. I'm a fan of Mark Stoops. I am.
Why are
I
you
like
a fan? Mark Stoops got absolutely embarrassed by the Todd last year.
Part of that is because he coaches at Kentucky.
Well, yeah.
Which proved your point. No, but it proves both of our points, because Auburn is just in a terrible place in football. And it's starting to change. My mindset is starting to change. It's really sad. But
you're starting to think like a Mississippi State fan.
Yes, I am. I'm starting to think of a team that doesn't win football games.
Because they don't. They haven't won in years.
In the past 3 years, I've still looked at Auburn football as what it was when it was solid, you know? And you're like, you look at these and you're like, oh, I don't really care the kind of season Kentucky's having. We're not going to lose to Kentucky. You know, we're not going to lose to Mississippi State at home. Like, that's just not going to happen. But now it's been drilled into me by all these coaches that just can't win football games, that you watch these games and you look at these games on the schedule and you're like, whoo, man, tough night in Kroger Field. That's going to be just a bloodbath. And it's sad. It really is. And I don't want to stay too low on this podcast, but I think that
just remember that we have a $92 million facility for us to have a knockout drag out up at Kroger Field.
Well, part of that is meant for
Kroger.
Yes.
Where you buy your orange juice.
I think Hugh Freeze has got to have time to build his roster. Recruiting wise in year one, it was solid. Performance on the field in year one was poor. All right. Year two, recruiting so far is solid, but it's so far away. I mean, it's tough to get excited about a recruiting class in March. It really, especially with how recruiting is these days with all these flips, decommits. You got to get excited in December if it's still top 10. Hopefully you have a decent performance on the field as opposed to the poor performance that we had last year. And that's just where we're at.
Last question, and then we'll wrap up. Okay. You can have a top 10 high school recruiting class this year. Okay.
Okay.
Or you can have a top 20 recruiting class, but you get an elite quarterback that you poach out of the portal going into the fall this year, and you win 10 games.
Oh, absolutely. I'd pick that.
I agree. Why is the mentality that these quarterbacks are too expensive? Why is it the mentality that when Riley Leonard enters the portal, that he's too expensive?
No, I agree.
Why is the mentality that every quarterback that entered the portal, they go, it's crazy how much money they're asking for? Well, guess what? It's crazy how much your buyout's going to be if you don't get one of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You see teams like Notre Dame. You see all these teams that are consistently getting these transfer quarterbacks. They're willing to pay for these transfer quarterbacks, and that's where Auburn needs to be. Obviously, you want to recruit a guy, but if you go through this fall and Peyton Thorne is the same player he was last year.
Spring. You go through this spring, and you
the,
see
the issue the is the issue is the amount of good quarterbacks that are going to enter the portal after spring, because it's the reason that these quarterbacks are entering the portal after spring are because they go through spring training and they're not going to start.
No.
Peyton Thorne last year.
Do you know what you do? You find out who is a team that has a really good quarterback, but their team's not very good, and you DM him on Instagram and you say, hey, $2 million to come to Auburn University. And you know what? Magically, the coach rubbed him the wrong way, and he doesn't like the way the chocolate milk tastes in their football-only facility.
They won't give him the smoothies anymore.
And we have a $92 million smoothie machine at Auburn University. And all of a sudden, somebody comes here. That's what you do. That's what winning programs do. Hugh doesn't care about cheating. Don't pretend he doesn't care about cheating. He literally got banned for cheating. I know he cheats. I know he can cheat. Cheat well.
And obviously that's an argument. You know, like that's going to be people want to cheat. People want to pay players, whatever. What I'm saying
get paid $80K to work jobs where you don't cheat. When you get paid in the millions of dollars, you're cheating. Everybody is. They're cheating in Wall Street. They're cheating in college football, college basketball. If you get paid millions of dollars in salary, you're cheating somehow. So go cheat well. Win with your cheating. We're not paying you $80K to be a virtuous family guy.
Yeah, so Wheeler's just broken. You know, Wheeler just wants to start cheating. And honestly, I don't terribly disagree with you that a lot of these elite programs are probably, you know, still greasing some palms, doing things that they're not supposed to do, tampering. You can look at the whole Iowa-Alabama situation and you're like, all right, both schools are tampering over there. Yeah. You know, whatever. But if we're just talking about technically following the rules of the NCAA, the guys that are going to naturally enter the portal in the spring window are because they're probably not going to start at their previous or at their current destination. You see guys like Peyton Thorne was a spring transfer guy. It was in a quarterback battle. Didn't look like he was going to start. Hits the portal. Auburn gets him. All right. That's where we're at. Peyton Thorne has one more year of eligibility. If he plays the whole season, he's the same as last year, and they don't feel that confident that Walker White is going to be that guy as a sophomore. And by the end of the season, you need to be like, no, Walker White is going to be a stud. And if you cannot say that confidently, then yeah, you dish over some serious money and you get one of the five best quarterbacks in the transfer portal with two good recruiting classes and you play good football. That's what you have to do. And if Hugh doesn't have a good year, you're starting to get into that Brian Harsin territory where you took a bet that, you know, you're like, oh no, I'm not going to pay for this quarterback. I'm going to build my roster. I'm going to recruit my quarterback. You know, that's what Brian Harsin did. You know, Brian Harsin was like, no, I can stick with TJ. I've got Holden that I just recruited. He's going to come in. He's going to be my QB of the future. Brian Harsin gets fired, and it doesn't really look like Holden's going to be that QB of the future. And it's difficult to put all your eggs in the basket of some high school kid. It's easier to say, yeah, we, you know, we're putting a lot of money in, but we've watched this guy's good at football. You know, we've seen him play well in the Power Five. So you see it's a very risky business that Hugh Freeze is playing. And he, I mean, this is definitely a year. I don't even know if it's a prove it year. It's a, if you don't have a top, realistically, if you don't have a top 12 recruiting class and you don't win 8 games, you don't want to say he'll get fired, but it's a distinct possibility. So I think that Hugh definitely has his work cut out for him. And I hope for the sake of all things good that he has a decent year and we can go into year three under Hugh Freeze, have a good recruiting class and not have to destabilize everything again. But,
and if you're the Boosters and you don't want to give, like, if you're going to be so mad that you're going to give Auburn $4 million to pay Hugh's buyout, why don't you just give $4 million and win and be happy?
Yeah.
Like, if you have the money to pay the buyout, because we always find the money to pay the buyout, how can we not just find the money to buy the player?
But, you know, I will say, I think that Hugh Freeze definitely can, you know, be a little bit more political with the donors than some previous coaches have been. So I think that Hugh is going to be better with the donor relations. And I don't think that you're going to have as many donors kicking the door down with, you know, checks and just writing a incredible checks to fire the guy. I think that if it's a bad year, Hugh Freeze will be able to talk his way into another year and into some serious spending through the portal. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll be back in the future, hopefully with more info on spring training, A-Day coming up. You know, we're definitely hoping that that's going to be a positive experience, getting to watch the team play live ball, have guys that, you know, might play better in the games, have more of an opportunity to showcase their abilities in a game atmosphere as opposed to a practice atmosphere. We're excited about that moving forward. And, you know, as always, thank you guys so much for listening, and War Eagle.
War Eagle.